Good morning, and welcome to session number two here at the Marble Seed Conference. Day two, Saturday. We're ready to rock the pre-lunch hours. Today we have Fresh Robertson with a program called Funding Your Farm with Little to No Debt. Obviously, there's a lot of interest about that. My name is Elizabeth Tigan, and I'm here to run the room. I have a few little housekeeping things. If we could remember to turn off our cell phones or silence them in whatever way is best, that would be great. Also, there's going to be a lot of Q&A here, and we only have one mic to use, so I'm going to be running back and forth. But because we have this recorded for us for posterity, it's really important that people talk into a mic because we won't be able to hear questions. So if you have a burning question, raise your hand and I'll try to get the mic to you as soon as possible. I also want to remind you to fill out an evaluation. And we ran out of them because they're so popular. And you can scan the QR codes on the doors on the way out of the conference in order to fill out the evaluation. And what else? I just heard that the bookstore is closing at 3 o'clock today and they're having a sale. Buy four, get one free. I know, right? So please support our bookstore and all those authors. So amazing. And if you have any questions, just let me know. You can come tap me. I'm going to sit in the middle. The number for the what? Oh, interpretation.
Is an interpreter in the room?
Is there an interpreter in the room?
I hope so.
Yeah, I will text someone and I will figure that out. Okay. Does anybody else have any questions? That's a good one. Okay. Fresh, take it away. Thank you.
Thank you. And I don't want to make you work too hard, Elizabeth, but I really like to engage and have people talk back. So if I hear you, I'll repeat it also if you don't get the mic. So, all right. Hello, everyone. It's nice to see a pretty full room. So what I think about when I see a full room is there's going to be so much knowledge and so much information because I'm up here and I have a little bit of information, but I know all together we have a lot of information. And so that's kind of how we're gonna move through today. We'll start with, this is what you came to, right? So this is the description that I sent, you know, thinking about stress, thinking about how much finances stress me out and how much anxiety and stuff it costs me. And so thinking about like, how can we relieve some of that stress and worry and concern, and how can we share resources with each other? So this is where we are. But the thing I want to start with before we get really into the presentation is that was the description, but what is it that you want and you want to get out of this space and out of this room today before you leave that would feel good, that would feel successful, like it was worth you coming to this 10:30 session instead of chickens or some of the other ones? You're trying to be like me? Okay. Yeah.
Are you a 501c3?
I am not a 501c3. And, you know, we'll talk about some of the work that I do, but people sometimes have said to me, oh, that's nonprofit work. And so I believe that businesses should be integral parts of their community. We do a lot of mutual aid work, but I work in the community where I live and taking care of my folks. And so some of your stuff might look like 501c3 work, even if you're not a 501c3. But I'm not, but I've worked for a lot of them, which is where some of these skills came from. What else do people want to get out of today? Yeah?
I want to get comfortable asking for money.
Get comfortable asking.
Having that 501c3.
Okay, so get comfortable asking for money, especially when you're not a 501c3. All right, anything else? What else? Anything I talk about is going to be fine? Nobody else? Yeah. Okay. More suggestions about places to go to search for funding. Okay. Anything else?
Your tips on what's the best crowdfunding method.
I don't know if about best, but what he said is, what's the best crowdfunding method? So we'll talk about crowdfunding. So, anything else? Okay. All right, great. So we'll get started. So this is who I am. You can ask me questions about myself and my background. Things that I'll share that I feel are important is that I'm Southern. I'm in the Midwest now, but I'm a transplant. I'm originally from Eastern North Carolina. And the distinction that I give people, so you can remember what Eastern North Carolina is that our barbecue has no tomato product in it, right? So it's vinegar-based, vinegar, some chili flakes. You do your pulled pork or turkey, or if you have some vegetarian options, you're going to make kind of a vinegary barbecue sauce. So that's me. And then some of the things I really care about in the world are accessibility. So folks having access, whether that's to food, clothes, shelter, all that stuff. I want people to have accessibility to stuff, knowledge, resources, how many people need to be in this room who aren't, or at this conference who aren't, how do we get them here? Just access in general. And so that's no matter where you live, your income, all that stuff, that's what I care about. I want things to be pleasurable for people, so I care about pleasure. So delicious, yummy food, yes. Yeah, so the comment was, and I'm not gonna be able to capture it fully, so if it's a longer one, we should get you a mic, but are we gonna talk about farm bill discussion? Because there's a lot of resources and funds and money tied up in the farm bill, and that's a big piece of viability and success is knowing that farm bill. We're not gonna talk about it a lot. We're not gonna talk about it much at all today unless people in the room bring it up and there's a lot of knowledge share. I don't have much in it in the presentation, but that's a good point, and we should include that kind of stuff in the future because it's huge. Well, yeah.
Just in the grand discussion of agriculture and farming.
Maybe Mike.
What's called parody.
I'm gonna give you a mic because I want to be able to capture what you're saying and the recording to hear it, and so it's accessible to folks. And then, yeah.
Yeah, so in 1914, you know, parity was established. So farm gate prices rose at the rate of inflation. And that was established and in place until President Reagan ended it in 81. You know, single pen stroke, parity's over, and farmers have been fighting to survive ever since. And I met with the U.S. Department of Justice in a meeting in 2010 where I asked why, you know, DOJ does not enforce antitrust. And he said, well, it's because technically the law is not the law anymore. I'm like, really? So what is it? He said, we like to call it the greater good. I said, well, could you define what the greater good is? And he said that we've been instructed at the Department of Justice that if total vertical integration will feed people cheaper, we're not to stand in its way. Mm-hmm. So all of us that produce food were affected by that statement and that comment because we are considered irrelevant in everything. And, you know, I think we all came to this conference to prove that we're not irrelevant and that we can work, but we need to find the tools and the methods necessary to actually be successful. But again, it's a struggle because, you know, like you said, it's like, do we find funding to fund what we do, or should our farms actually be profitable and we actually make the money we need to do what we do? So very interested in hearing what the discussion is, because farm my whole life and still trying to figure out how to actually make money doing it.
Yeah, got you. Thank you. All right, so we're going to have a really good, robust discussion, I could tell already. So I'll finish introducing myself. So I care about pleasure, so not only should we just have access to any food, I want that food to be pleasurable, enjoyable. If you have dietary restrictions, I still want you to have something delicious to eat. That's super important to me. And then also real choice is important to me because sometimes I get these pseudo choices, right? So I live on the south side of Chicago currently, and in Chicago is very segregated. It's a very different city, depending on where you are. If you're downtown, south side, west side, north side, it's a very different city. And so and where I live, you know, we just got a grocery store back a couple years ago after not having one for 8 years. And there's a lot of different restaurants, but usually like a certain type. Like, you know, there might be Fry Shacks or Little Mom and Pops, but there's not a diversity of restaurants. Like, I can't easily access a farmer's market and the grocery store and, like, you know, a community garden and all those things. And so one of the things I talk about, like, is people say you have choice, but there might only be a few options in the hat that you're picking from, right? So if I go up to downtown Chicago, there's farmer's markets, there's, like, multiple grocery stores, there's, like, you know, all of these things. There's, you know, fast food restaurants, and then there's sit-down restaurants, and there's salad bars and smoothie bars, and there's, like, all of this. So there's an abundance to choose from, right? And then I have choice. So I think about that. And then I'm probably similar to a lot of folks in this room. I usually say, if there's a zombie apocalypse, then you want me on your team, right? But I know that I'm in a room of farmers and growers and probably folks who also cook, folks who rig stuff together and build stuff, who are fix-its, because that's what it is to be a farmer. So I think we're all desirable zombie apocalypse team members, right? And then the other thing that's really important to me are my people, my community. We're going to get into that a little bit more. My love language is acts of service, and I like to say that I'm in love with my community. And then if you see these pictures, that's my partner, Danny, who's over here, is going to be helping take notes and capture things so that we can kind of have that resource of the room. And then that's my dog, Cashew, who is truly a little nut. So, yeah, she's energy. And cashews are good for you, right? You can remember because they look like smiles. And so she's good for me. She's pricey because vet bills, and if she eats things she shouldn't, but she's also really energetic. So, all right. And then the next thing I always like to do whenever people are on the farm or coming to visit is to call in our ancestors. So here's my grandpops and my grandma who are no longer with us, and they were sharecroppers in Eastern North Carolina. And so my mom and all of her siblings and folks grew up on a farm. They were sharecroppers. Their four main things that they grew were corn, tobacco, cotton, and peanuts. So I have little pictures of those up there. And then this is my dad. So, like, I feel like my dad is as a child, like, overalls. Maybe that's where it comes from. And then here are some pictures. Every time anyone comes to the farm, the first thing we do each year is do a land offering before we start asking the land to produce for us. We give an offering to the land. Most of the time, I try to incorporate things that my grandparents grew on their farm. So here I am with the first time I ever grew tobacco. There's some little cotton, a scarlet cotton down there you can't really see, which later produced cotton, which was great. There was peanuts, and then we had some corn, but it was much later from this picture. So, but, you know, if there's any ancestors you want to bring into the space, I suggest, you know, you can say it silently. You can say it out loud now. We probably won't capture all of that on the recording. But I think about that because, you know, our folks who came before us was really resilient. They had plenty of creative fundraising strategies, plenty of information as to how to make it work. I know that this week is CSA week, and so we can thank our ancestor Booker T. Watley for that model of CSA to make it viable for us as farmers to kind of guarantee what our market was going to be. Are there CSA farmers in the room? Okay. So any ancestors you want to bring in the space? I'll give you a chance, or you can think about who were your resourceful ancestors. All right, so what we're gonna cover, and one of the things that I just wanted to remind folks is that I believe that all of us are teachers and we all have the knowledge that we need. So it's not just me sharing resources. Please share resources back. We're going to capture them, and then we're going to put them, all the information that we capture, we're going to also put it up on a site, on our website under our Marble Seed link, and then you can come and grab all those things down, and anything else that you want me to share, I'll throw up there, and you can grab it down later. But I'll share experiences that I'm familiar with, things that we've done personally. I've talked to a lot of other farmers, so I'll share some resources from them that they've done and tips and things that they've done. And we'll have some time to brainstorm. So if there's like fundraising that you're trying to do, you want to tell me about your farm and things like that, then, you know, I can help during some time here. We'll probably be able to get a couple of people. And then we'll also be able to help you as a group. So very specific ways. I'm sure there's a lot of things that folks have done in the room. Yeah, but one of the things we're going to start with after I tell you a little bit about my farm is some strategy and some questions that we can ask ourselves before we even start to ask for money or seek out money that'll make the seeking out money process easier. So that's what we'll go through. And if I'm going too fast at any point, let me know. I want to get to the part where we're really in the nitty gritty. So I'm kind of rushing through the other stuff, but... So this is Fresher Together. We're a collaborative food and farming project for healing, economic development, training, and retreat. We talk about ourselves as the farm that community built because we like to engage with folks a lot. Collaboration is one of our key values. And one of the things we think about our mission is from soil to humans. We're creating like nourishing food and spaces that are restorative and that are going to support well-being. So we like to take care of the earth, the soil, be good stewards of the land, a lot of organic practices and things like that. And we like to take care of our people with food that is nourishing and that supports them. And then we like to create spaces for folks to show up and be nourished and supported and to share resources. One of the things we do that came out of the pandemic is our BIPOC harvest bag. And so we do like a collaborative CSA style where a lot of our items are in there, but we also support other black and brown farmers and producers. And so we'll have like local honey, microgreens or salad mix, or, you know, sometimes there's like a little seasoning or a drink or hot sauce or different things in the bag. And people can subscribe to it just like a CSA. They can buy their shares up front, and then sometimes we open it up during the seasons if we have enough production so people can buy one-off bags as well. Yeah. Yeah, set up like a CSA. We usually will book like about 22 weeks worth of product, like that's, but our full share is 20 weeks, but then people can pick their date. So we're usually someone's traveling at least or something's happening part of that time. So people can pick their dates. And then we have a full share, and then we have things like a half share, which is a 10 pack. And then what's become really popular that we're gonna kind of ramp up is our 5-pack. And so people have been picking a 5-pack, and we just thought they might pick random dates, but a lot of folks have been intentionally picking it and then picking to get one bag every month, so they're kind of not overwhelmed. And then because we also source from other farmers, our shares are usually a little bit pricier than other CSAs, but we make sure that people have access to them. So we have solidarity shares, so people who can't afford to pay for them have access to that. And then people who do and can afford to pay for them sometimes will pay for those shares, or we make smart partnerships so someone covers the full cost of a bag and then we can just give it away. Yeah. So our work we think about in 4 pillars. So when I came up with Fresher Together, I am a person who wears many hats. I am a chef, I'm a farmer. I like to build things and like weld and do all kinds of weird stuff. And then, so one of the things I thought about is how can I bring my full self to this work? If I created work where I was gonna leave my regular job and come to it, how could I bring my full self? And so it ended up lining up with these 4 pillars. And so we do a bunch of stuff in each of these pillars that all is around food and farming and supporting local farmers, but that we feel like is directly tied to our collective liberation and our collective freedom and our autonomy and sustainability. And so, I mean, most of us know about this. It's probably how a lot of our farms work. Like, you're always probably building or fixing something or repairing something or having to put up a hoop house or, you know, shade structures or whatever it is that you're doing. You're growing because you're farmers or you're stewarding animals or livestock. people are always probably asking you if you're doing markets or CSA bags, or well, how do you cook your food? What do we do with this, you know? And then all of it, we know a lot of us are in this work because it's very nourishing and healing to us. Otherwise, sometimes it would be like, why are we picking this work? Because it's hard work, right? And so I think about that a lot. These are just some of our values over, up at the top, and kind of all of this influences our work a lot. And then here's some of our pictures. So we had a local farmer who didn't have a wash pack station. Up at the top, there's some folks building her some tables. These are some of our harvest bag distributions. We do a program every week on Wednesdays where we take stuff from the farm, other people's donations, and we cook meals for a mutual aid program. Some harvest bags going out, and we love to have people on the farm. So all ages, we try to make the space accessible. We know that this work is really hard on our bodies, and it doesn't always seem accessible for everyone. So we try to make this work as accessible as possible. So it's a young person taking a break in a wheelbarrow. And then we see Danny at the top up there leading a workshop on fiber and fiber shed. We're trying to get into fiber and be able to grow that's as well. So, all right, now we're getting into it. So we're gonna have this discussion today framed around five questions, right? So this is Charlene Carruthers. Has anybody heard of or read the book Unapologetic? Yeah, I see a few hands in the back. So I love these five questions. I love Charlene. Here's a picture of us. She's also making films now and doing lots of great things. But Chicago-based activist has done a lot of organizing work and wrote this amazing book that kind of informs like how we can organize and how we can make impact on our futures and all of that. So these are five questions she poses throughout this book on how to build our future. And I think they line up really well when we're thinking about fundraising and how we get income and how we're gonna show up as farmers and how we're trying to change and do things as farmers, right? So the first question is, who am I, right? And so this question is about, what are your values, you know? What's important to you, who you are? So I think that's an important question to think about, right? So we're gonna get into different fundraising avenues like grants and asking for money or crowdfunding and all of these things, right? And so sometimes people tell me that why they think I get support, it's not so much about what I'm doing, but about who I am, right? And so I think this is a good question to start with around who you are, like what's important to you, what are your values, how do you show up in the world? And then like once you start thinking about this in advance, it's much easier to start putting it down in your grant applications and all of that. So that's the first question. The second question is, who are my people? And so this question to me is super important because it's a lot at the intersection of like, where am I gonna seek out this funding, right? Where am I gonna find funding? Who are my people? Who are they? Where are my resources? Like, how do, like, even if you're thinking about like your CSA members or anything like that. So I think about this question is like, are there identities that you align with that those are your people? Is there a geographic region that you're trying to support? Like, are you trying to feed people in your city, in your county, in your neighborhood? Is there a church that you belong to? Are you a veteran? Like, who are your people? Who are your community members, right? So it's important to think about that because there's also a space that you can go to and look to toward for resources, right? And that's also a space as you're applying for grants, you know who you're serving. You know who you're doing this work for. Or as you're crowdfunding, if your church is really about your community and that's who you seek out and you go to and that's you're a big part of that, then maybe that's a space where you're intersecting with who you're talking to about your work, right? So that's question. What do we want to do? Why are you farming, right? What do you want to do? Why are you growing food? Why are you growing food organically? Why are you raising livestock? What do you want to do or change about, you know, our food system? So that's a question to think about in advance before you even start thinking about asking for money. What are you doing? What do you want to do? Do I want to make food accessible to everyone on the south side of Chicago, right? Like, is that's, that maybe that's what I want to do. Or I want everyone to have access to a farmer's market. Or I want, you know, what is it that you want to do? What's your goals, right? So that's a good question to start thinking about there. What are we building? So this question is about how are we getting there, right? Like, what are you building to make this possible? Are we building an advocacy group that's going to travel to DC and visit and do policy work every, you know, quarter or something, right? Or every year, right, before people do votes, right? Are we building a farmer's market? Are we building a food aggregation space or cold storage? What are you building, right? And hopefully you're building that with who your people are, because that kind of collaboration works, right? And then, are we ready to win, right? So it's okay if you're not ready, right? It's okay if you're not ready for, you know, all the stuff that's pouring in from the farm bill being done effectively, or for you to get that huge, like, maybe you're gonna get that $250,000 value added grant. So, but if you are ready to win, great. You're set up, you got your systems. And if you're not, you're gonna be thinking about, like, how do I get there? Am I ready to actually receive funding? Am I ready to act on that? Like, do I have time? Do I have space? Do I have people and folks who are gonna, like, help and support me? And so these five questions I would suggest people sit with before you even, like, start. Right, before you even start your next steps, is thinking about these five questions. And as we go through and talk through, like, some of these fundraising strategies, think about these, right? Think about, like, oh, like, if I'm gonna ask for money, who are my people, right? What am I trying to do? What am I asking for money to build? Like, am I building my farm? Is this farm just for myself? What does it even look like for us to win, right? So let's think about these questions as we go through. All right, so some strategies. One is asking for the money, right? Like, how do you ask for that money? And so this can be gifts, right? So friends, families, some of this stuff is, like, in kind, right? Even, do you need the money or do you need the thing, right? So if somebody, do you need the $50,000 or do you need the tractor? So just thinking about asking, right? Getting in the process of asking. And we can talk through some strategies on how to make asking easier when we get to the part where we're kind of more involved. But this, I talked to a bunch of farmers. I talked to one farmer, if you know David from Love Food Farm, I think they're kind of in the Madison area. And one of the things he said to start in our conversation was, like, I just got to get this out of the way because this is, like, a privileged thing. He's like, my mom helped us get started, right? Like, she did her something with her 401k. Like that was a resource he was able to ask for family, and then they helped. And I know a lot of people have that story, but there's no shame in that story, right? You might have resources in your life. Those might be your people. Your people might be folks who have access to resources, and they might just be waiting for the opportunity to help you and be able to support you. And that's, like, an honor and a privilege for them. I am not good at asking for help. It has been something that I'm good at asking for help for other people. So, like, you tell me your story, I'm about it. Let's go advocate for you. But for me, it's really hard for me to ask for help for myself. And so that's a practice, right? It's definitely a practice, but one of the things that people have told me that makes it a little bit easier is that, like, we want to help you. It's a privilege for us to be able to support you and you to tell us how we can support you. So that's one thing that, you know, that ability to ask, right? Two, grants. We can dig in the weeds for grants. This could be all about grants. I'm sure there's gonna be a lot of questions about grants. There's a lot of grant resources for farmers, even if you are not a nonprofit. There's even more if you're a nonprofit, but there are even if you're not a nonprofit. And one of the things that I'll add is, if some of your work looks like nonprofit work, sometimes you can get a fiscal sponsor for that portion of your work, right? So like if you are feeding your pantry all the time and you are growing like a percentage of your land, or you're dedicating a certain number of eggs or chickens or whatever it is that you're up to feeding like your community, there might be a possibility there that that part of your work looks like a nonprofit and you can get some sponsorship or funding, grant funding for that, yes. Okay, the question was, can you unpack what is a fiscal sponsor and what is their role and what do they do? So a fiscal sponsor is usually a 501c3 standing organization. Sometimes they do other work, like I know our local policy group has acted as fiscal sponsors for other entities, even though they do their own work, right? But they sometimes are just an organization that does fiscal sponsorship. And their role is to pretty much manage the money. So if you say, like, I'm doing an after-school program where I'm teaching children, were you in the mushroom workshop? Like, I'm teaching children how to, like, remediate our water with, like, mycelium or something, right? And, like, that is a program that you're doing after school, and you're not, like, making money off of it or anything. That is something that maybe your farm can do under the guise of a fiscal sponsor. And so if there's a grant to do that, but they only give those grants to 501c3, that money would go to your fiscal sponsor, and then that fiscal sponsor would manage that money. So you'd be like, okay, we got to buy mycelium, like we have to buy spawn from Field and Forest for this many like children, and we have to, you know, your fiscal sponsor makes sure that money's being spent in a correct way, and then it kind of passes through them to get to you and your work. Yes, most fiscal sponsors, although there's work being done around, some organizations should do this fiscal sponsorship for free, but usually they take an administrative cut or percentage. A low end is usually like 5% of whatever your funding is, and a higher end I've seen 9, 12, 10, you know, some stuff up there. But they usually take a percentage. It's in the guise of they're managing and they have to do a lot of admin work, so it's supposed to be supporting that. But yeah, usually they'll take a percentage of that. But you can apply for some grants through that if you really do have mission-based work that is falls into that category. But there are grants that are for, you know, farmers specifically get a lot more access to grants. But there are small businesses. So like farms are small businesses, or depending on the size of your entity, there's grants for that too. This one around fully utilizing your land. So I know at this conference last year, we went to a workshop on farm stays and people who were like also Airbnb-ing or having people could come and camp. You know, you have to assess this for yourself and whether it's worth the headache and all of that and your insurance. But I see farms do that well, right? Like it's just like, you know, they have an extra little cabin, or they pop up a tent or an RV or whatever it is, and they let people come and be on their land. There used to be more resources for outside entities to kind of help you curate that process. But that's one I've seen a lot of farms do. Having events, visits, farm tours that you charge for, whether it's like bringing little ones in or from schools. I remember when I was little, I went to a farm and they made butter and like, you know, and showed us all of that. But you could charge for those events. There's also, I forget his name of his mushroom operation. He's on the East Coast, he's not Midwest. But he does mushrooms for his business, but he's also on land where he lets people come forage, but they have to pay him a fee to come and be able to forage on the land for a certain amount of time. Now, you probably have to check with your insurance whether that makes sense for you, but it's very minimum input on your end as long as you're okay insurance-wise to let people come to your land and do that kind of stuff. Does anyone else do any kind of utilizing of their land in ways that makes money for them? Yeah, what kind of stuff? Pizza on the farm. We want to do that too. So pizza on the farm during the summer. Yes, renting out to a hunter is also a good one. I've seen people do that one a lot too. Yeah.
We've done skill shares.
Skill shares where there are workshops and people pay to attend. Yep.
Not currently, but a previous farm I managed did weddings.
Weddings on the farm. Weddings are a big one, and I know that they take a lot of energy and time for the farm. Yeah. But yeah, weddings are. Yeah. But you, like, there are some, like, we, a nonprofit that I was working for that was doing urban ag had weddings on the farm, too, sometimes. And they were like, this is what it looks like. And they were like, we love it. You know, like, they didn't have to do much work to, they were like, it's okay, we're going to put a table here. And, like, yeah. Oh, wow. So what she said was there's a salon and people come and they'll get, you know, made up, their hair and stuff done. I think I saw your hand. Yeah. Yeah. So what she said is she used to rent to photographers and they would do graduation pictures, wedding pictures, whatever. There's a farmer who's one of my mentors who's been growing I don't think last season, but a season or so before. There's a picture at the end of the slide of me in that field. But she was growing. She had a contract for sunflowers for the oil. But there's a point where the sunflowers are beautiful. So there was definitely photography happening there. A photographer came and was offering sessions and stuff like that. So did I see one more hand? Okay. Yeah. Yeah, so the question was, how do you approach applying for grants if you don't hold a 501c3, but you want to get a fiscal sponsor? My suggestion is to first make your fiscal sponsor relationship and then think about the grant. Because one thing is, like, not all grants will accept fiscal sponsors. There's a lot that do, but not all grants will. We just had one where they asked that you had your fiscal sponsor relationship for a certain amount of time. So I think it was, what did Dow say, like 6 months or a year? They asked that you be a part of that relationship with your fiscal sponsor for a certain amount of time before the application. So
I'm talking about like the application itself.
Yeah, so if they accept fiscal sponsors, what you do in the application itself is where it asks for the FEIN, you're going to be using your fiscal sponsor's FEIN and then their name. They usually, if they accept fiscal sponsors, they clearly usually ask your fiscal sponsor's agency name, like, you know, their FEIN and all of that. Did you have a question?
Yeah, just that I'm president of Family Farm Defenders. So
oh, yeah. Yes. Great. Awesome. So what he said was he's president of Family Farm Defenders, Booth 404, and they do a lot of fiscal sponsorship. So if that's a relationship you're trying to build, then that's a connection to make, and you can come and visit. They're based out of Madison, but you can support the Midwest, so you support the area, and they support the area. So great. So there was one more I forgot that I was going to say about fully utilizing land, but it'll come back to me. All right, so I know this one doesn't sound like fundraising, but it is helpful. So reducing costs, right? So I put under, is there a coupon, right? So there usually not is not literally a coupon, but sometimes, right? So like you got this to me, I think about like I need an item. Maybe I'm going to buy it new or I'm going to buy it from a certain location. is there a way to get it cheaper, right? Does my membership to my insurance agency make it cheaper? I'm a member of Young Farmers, right? They have coupon codes to make like the BCS cheaper. And if I'm ordering for Johnny's, I can get a percentage off, right? And one of the things that I wanna mention is like, sometimes these are like little strategies, but the little strategies add up quick, right? So the thing I always think about is like, when I would get paid and I'm and I would buy like a little thing here, I might put $2 on the meter, do this and all these little things. And I don't think I'm spending a lot of money. And then I go and look and I'm like, where did all my money go, right? Because all those little things, they add up pretty quick. And it works the same way, the other way too, right? So if you are getting a little grant here, a little cost reduction there, a little, it really adds up to a significant amount when you kind of are on the other side looking back at it. So I think about like, how can I reduce costs? And sometimes this just means asking, right? So like, if you, I'm trying to think of something recently. You know, there's a flower workshop that's gonna be happening at a space in McHenry County next weekend, right? And so I wanted to go. I wasn't sure I was gonna be able to go. The price is a certain price, right? And so like, I just mentioned that. Like, I really wanted to attend this. I don't know if I'm gonna be able to, you know, the cost is prohibitive. And she was like, you know, we do have a few spaces that are available at a lower ticket price, right? And so sometimes those types of things you can just ask. And then, you know, then of course we have work conferences and things like this where I know they do work exchange, there's scholarships. But then like on pieces of equipment too, or rentals or things like that. Sometimes there's like little ways to reduce the cost. And even if it's by $100, $200, something like that, or, you know, I think these coupon codes from being members of some of these organizations are like 10%. 10% on a $6,000-$7,000 tractor to walk behind, it's a big deal, right? Like those things add up. So reducing costs, add-ons. So I've seen a lot of farmers, sometimes who aren't doing that much farming, but they're raising money maybe for their farm, do swag. And so whether it's t-shirts, some of these you don't have to manage yourself. We have someone who's been helping us a little bit and they're saying, oh, here's how I did it when I first got started with their Etsy business. They were like, you know, I used the third party. You put the design in, people can just order straight from the site. Maybe they take a bigger percentage, but it's just passive income, right? Do you have a funny slogan that you wanna put on a sticker, right? I love stickers. I didn't bring my water bottle, but my water bottle is just full of stickers, right? And then sometimes they're free, like, you know, down in the exhibit hall, but sometimes it costs a few bucks. And so that shirts, I love repping other farms. But sometimes those shirts are like $20, $30, and they add up, and we buy them because we also know that they're supporting that farm, right? And so those swag ideas and products really help. One thing we do is like our harvest bag is not just us, right? So like if you have a farm store or, you know, or you're doing a thing, adding on another farmer's, if it's not too much of a headache, right? If it's not too much work for you to take on adding something else in, and then selling it for like the retail price at your stand or things like that. Yes. The question was, when you're doing a farm share with other farmers, how does that work? Do you pay them a percentage? So the way I do the harvest bag is that my farmers are selling to me at a wholesale price. Or a reduced cost sometimes of what their product would be at retail. So if they sold it at their own farmer's market table, maybe they'll charge $7, but maybe they charge me $4.75, right? And I'm gonna sell it for $7, right? Or I'm gonna sell it for whatever their suggested price that they normally sell it for, because I'm in the same community as them and I don't wanna lowball them or anything, you know? So Yeah, so you can buy straight out. Some people, depending on your community and who you're doing it with, might do a cost share agreement with you. So they don't have time. Sometimes people don't have time to sit at market tables, but maybe you have time to sit at market tables with your goods, and you're gonna also have their goods. And so maybe you base it on, like, for everyone we sell, because I'm selling it at my market, I get 40% or I get 30% or whatever it is, right? And you can work out that agreement with whoever it is. Yeah, so the question was, have you ever had the experience where farmers may have a surplus, maybe they don't have the hands to harvest their field, maybe they've already been on it once, and they're like, you can come clean it up because otherwise it's compost, right? And so, and then that the farmer says, you can take it, do whatever you want with it, as long as you get the labor here and do it, it's yours, you can do whatever you want. I've definitely seen that before, usually on the end of, we also do community fridges. We also do like the meals, community meals. So we'll take it and put it in some of those programs. But definitely there's like times where you could take it and do it or sell it or, you know, all of those things. As long as, you know, if you've gotten permission, if they've said if you pick it, you can use it, then yeah, that's another means. Number six, I put around leveraging our skills. So what is it that you're good at that you're okay monetizing, right? You don't have to monetize everything you're good at, but if you have skills or resources or especially if they're easy for you versus they add a lot more to your plate, I just want to say that a lot because some of the things will be just as much work as just selling more products. But if there's like a consulting, there's speaking, sometimes it's not much, right? Like our farm, we have a farm beginnings. So do people know Farm Beginnings? So Farm Beginnings is a program that folks can go through and like work on their business plans, work out their farm dreams, sometimes help with the fiscal part of it and writing that stuff up. And they always need speakers, right? And so like sometimes that speaking area might be your expertise. And it's like, I can hop on Zoom for an hour and speak and get a few bucks. It didn't add much to my plate. It didn't like, it wasn't an inconvenience for you. You're talking about your farm and how you run and operate or talking about whatever it is that is your expertise. You can always plug some of those things in a little bit here and there. So those things add up and you might only do them like once or twice a month, or maybe your rules are I only do them in the winter. Then, you know, you can have those types of things as well. All right, and then we're gonna go into things like crowdfunding, right? That kind of same, all the little bits really add up. Like that kind of mini hands make light work. So thinking about that, you can crowdfund for your farm. You could crowdfund for a project. I would suggest, you know, a very specific thinking through those questions. What are you trying to do? What's the story? Who are you? What are you trying to build, right? And like, what does that look like? And so then if you're gonna put together a crowdfunding, you know, fundraiser, then you wanna kind of make sure you're really specific. And then also crowdfunding is not passive, right? You don't just put it up and then it magically gets filled unless you just got it like that where you, you know, but you're gonna, it's work, right? So like what I suggest is like you put it up and like who all is on your team, right? So like maybe that's who your community is, right? And so you've talked to like five people at your community center or at your church or like in your farmer viability circle, right? And they're all gonna kind of blast it amongst their networks. You're gonna take it, you're gonna send out an email, and then you're gonna set a timer so that a week later you make a few phone calls or shoot a few texts. But it's work, right? So you're gonna put it out there and it's great, and stuff will come in and hopefully people will share it, how you tell your story, maybe take a little video of your farm. You don't wanna make it really heavy on yourself because we're not trying to add more labor and stuff to us as farmers, but you do want to put in work to make sure it's reaching and it's going out there. And there's I tend to be forgetful. I'll see a thing and I forget that I meant to give $5 or give $10 to it. And so when people don't give right away, you can't like, is that me? Oh no, that's something else. Okay, you don't take it personal, right? People might forget they meant to give. That's why you gotta remind folks and you gotta kinda set up a schedule. And so if people have questions, we can talk about that a little bit more too. But I suggest that as a means, yes.
Mm-hmm. Explain farmer viability circle.
Oh, it was a question about what is a farmer viability circle. So I think these exist in different areas. I know sometimes entities that support this kind of work get funding for it sometimes. We have a thing that we call them farmer viability circles. Maybe they're called different things where that is a part of, like, there's a place that's called Angelic Organics Learning Center. I don't know if they're tabling downstairs or not, but one of the programs that they offer is this way of connecting. Farmers can form groups, right? And you can form groups based on, you know, your region, your identities, whatever. You can form groups of farmers. And then the purpose of those is to help you all be successful, right? You meet a certain amount of times a year. You bounce ideas off of each other. You design, like, a learning plan. Like, okay, we as a group of farmers, we really got to learn about employment. Like, ours this year is about employees, legal, how do we be good managers? Like, we really have to learn about that. A couple years ago, ours was about finance. Like, oh my goodness, we gotta learn about QuickBooks. We gotta learn about budgets and balance sheets and income statements. So it's a group of farmers and we get together a certain amount of time. But then there's also some financial support that comes through, and it comes through from grant, like a grant from the organization. And like we are able to use that for, like, the first year we used it for workshops on balance sheets, budgets, income statements, all of that. And then this year we're using it in a couple weeks on workshops around employment law, how to be good managers, what we legally need to do to, like, be actually doing well with our employees. And we got Farm Commons memberships, which have been great. Yeah. Where are we? Okay. Crowdfunding, we can talk about that more. So 8 for me was like reimagine. So to me, I think about this as like slowing down. That could be one way to reimagine. So there's some folks I follow on social media who are like, I build my farm at the pace that I can afford to build it. Like, I don't do more than I can afford. I'm not going into debt. I got the land, now I'm building it piece by piece. And like, I'm just slowing down at the pace at which I can do it, right? I've seen a lot of people, and I know some farms who are like, I put movie star, but whether they're like getting some like residuals from social media because they're like tracking everything they're doing and they have a camera, or they're like showing their practices and charging for them, or like, you know, they're just doing their work but capturing it so that they can then do that. So that's another option. But to me, I just think about this as like, kind of taking some time to think outside the box and what could you be thinking about, right? And then the last one, I know we said minimum to no debt. Sometimes debt makes sense, right? And so I was talking to a lot of farmers who are like, you know, I'm not completely debt averse. Like, sometimes debt makes sense. Taking it out at a low interest rate when I know it's gonna make a huge impact and I'm gonna be leveraging this money to do something and speed up my operation in a way that is gonna make it more profitable or is gonna make it more sustainable. Specifically, I was talking to David from Love Food Farm, and he was just like, you know, we've been kind of in this space where farmers are supposed to be kind of suffering and not paying themselves and all of this stuff. And he's just like, I'm not trying to be in that space, right? Like, I'm not trying to do that. That's not where I'm trying to be as a farmer. And so he was like, I'm not debt averse. He said he took out a small business loan when he first started. That helped him really get over a hump to be where his business is now. And he also has, as a regular practice, a lot of grants. So he's gotten like a ton of grants as well. So here are things we've done. We've done grants. We've kind of had investments where people were investing in us as a social good. So like American Heart Association, we've done crowd farming. We are going to do a farm warming. We finally just got permanent land. And so this year, this season will be our first season on permanent land. So we're really excited about that. And we're like, what can we do? And we're like, we'll do a farm warming, right? Like people come to house warmings. We never did a wedding, a reception. We never, you know, I just turned 40. I didn't throw a big 40th birthday party. But I was like, this is going to be my party. So if you've been wanting to celebrate, we're going to have a registry because sometimes we don't need the money. We need the things. And so we'll have a registry. People are like, let us know how to contribute. People can also give toward things. So we're going to try that out. We've had corporate gifts that go to very specific things. So like a corporation giving to support free bags or, you know, things like that. And so that's kind of like sales of your product, but it really helps because then it's like if you're trying to do community work too, then it's nice to do that. We've just tried this now that we have the permanent land. And so far so good, but we're trying naming rights, right? So like, people we know, people we care about, you want to name our greenhouse, you know, $10,000, you can name this, that'll support the farm, here's the difference that it makes, and so we're trying that, and people are about it, they're like, I'm going to name this after my grandma, and they're like, oh, you know, let me think what I want to name, like whether, you know, and so if you already have land, if you already have something, if you have some things there, you set a price, have a gift, and give people naming rights, and knowing that that's like a space, and there'll be a lot of meaning around that, right? We do a lot of collaborations. So like if I let's say I don't have a fiscal sponsor, I'm not trying to go after that grant, but you know, my local pantry is a nonprofit or somebody else and they need carrots or they need, you know, whatever it is, then I can collaborate with them and they're gonna get the funding to buy this from us, right? Like, so, some of that is still going back to just your product sales, but how can you do it strategically? How can you do it collaboratively? Maybe it's something about like teaching or education, things like that. And then we've done a lot of leveraging our skills. So in the way our entity is set up, the cooking component sometimes carries the farming component sometimes, or like, you know, speaking sometimes depends on the year, whether it's speaking about farming stuff or food stuff or any of the different like hats that we wear, sometimes that definitely adds a boost to the other components, but not adding a lot of like energy on our part, right? So here's some other things that I've gotten from farming community. Okay, so Michael Fields definitely has a booth downstairs. They do advisement and support on grants. They will not write it for you. They will advise and support. Farm Finance Institute always has a lot of resources. There's a lot that you can get from free from them before it becomes like a charge kind of thing, but I would utilize them. Equip, and one of the things some of the farmers told me were, like, people always think of EQIP as a hoop house grant, but they've been able to, like, do irrigation and run, like, line and all kinds of other things with EQIP. And the value-added producer grant, this one is, like, two different ways, the research portion or the implementation portion, but it is a big grant. So if you are new to writing grants, or even if you're not new to writing grants, I would say, don't have this be your first grant that you write. Don't take this on. Almost every farmer except one grain farmer that I know, I think she wrote it herself. But every farmer I've talked to about this was like, we hired someone, they wrote it, they have a certain amount of success rate. This is what they do. They write these all the time. And we had charged them a fee up front, that they charged a fee up front. And then there was also a fee that we paid over time with the grant. So it's a big grant. So I think the research one is like $100,000 and the implementation kind of one is $250,000, right? But that's a big grant. The Hoop House Tomato example is so funny. I was downstairs talking to Lakewind Food Co-op? And I was like, yeah, you know, I just was talking to a farmer the other week and he was telling me about how his food co-op wanted him to grow tomatoes, and But he didn't have a hoop house, and so he talked to the hoop house, talked to the food co-op to buy the hoop house, and then there was an arrangement with the payment and tomatoes, and now he has his infrastructure. And they were like, yeah, we did a similar thing, and I was like, oh, it's y'all. So there's like your food co-op, sometimes there's grants, there's these types of things that you can support each other in a mutually beneficial way. And that happens more often than you think, where you can, and then now you have this infrastructure, you know, that you can continue to build and grow your business. Merchandise, I talked to a lot of farmers who talked about merchandise and that adding, and then some people saying like, that, you know, one farmer was like, oh, I'm not smart enough to figure out merchandise, but if I were, that would be a good look for us, because, you know, they have a very known brand and presence. So if they just threw their thing on a shirt, people would rock it. And then I hear that the shirt return especially is pretty good, or the hats, or like different things like that. Friends and family, no shame, friends and family. If you got folks in your community who can do that, I would recommend them and support. This one I put is visiting your local office, but a lot of folks was just like, talk to your FSA people, talk to your NRCS agent, talk to these folks, and just be like, what can we do? What is available for us? What opportunities do y'all have? The Nifty Hoops example I just learned about since being here, around how the founder had like a Sunday brunch, like that they were selling like Sunday brunches for like 4 years or something, raised like $400,000 that allowed them to support farmers and start the hoop house business, which I thought was super dope. So, you know, that's another thing where I'm thinking, can you leverage something to kind of add in? Another farmer I talked to always said that they, for a certain amount of time, and they, I think they still do it, is they put 10% back in to whatever that they've kind of hit, they put 10% back in to keep supporting themselves and kind of that ability to add up. I think farms like Green Heifer, who's really popular on social media, it does that kind of expand as you can, don't do stuff before and slowing down. One of the things some folks talked about a lot was leasing, instead of feeling like you have to buy the land or buy certain things that will be a bigger upfront cost. Just that kind of support of leasing while you get there. We've been on an incubator plot for 3 seasons. We are just finishing up our incubation period. And, you know, it was great, but it gave us time to kind of get the business established, think about things, kind of figure out what we're going to do before we were able to purchase land. And then now we have kind of a permanent space. But that lease period was super helpful. And I know some people whose whole long-term plan is leasing. They're leasing from their forest preserve, and that was cheaper than them than owning. And I also was able to put them in a better spot where they have a farm store that's thriving, like because of where the traffic is. And if they were to try to buy that, it would have been impossible. People have suggested Kiva, which is kind of financing, but as a low interest rate and kind of a different special thing. Some folks, social media, where they're, I don't know if the rate is high enough where you're going to be getting enough money to make it worth it. It depends on how much, I guess, you're willing to put into it. Horseshoe example. So there's a farmer or a rancher, and I think she has horses, and she turns her old horseshoes into like these art pieces and sells them on Etsy. Like sometimes they still have dirt on them and everything, and then people buy them and she sells out, and it's minimum work for her, but instead of whatever she would have normally been doing with those horseshoes, like, and people hang them on their wall. So just like all of these outside of the box kind of thinking things. I put Angelic Organic Learning Center up here, and I can't remember the exact story, but I know when they were originally trying to expand and buy more land, they turned to their like CSA folks and the people who had been supporting through their CSA. And another farmer also told me that a lot. It's just like, your CSA members are the folks to turn to for financing sometimes. If you're gonna, you know, take out a loan, sometimes they're a good resource, or even like just to support your expanded growth. And then that made me think about convertible notes. And so sometimes what people do is they'll get a investment, like in a whatever regular business world, which I don't know why I say it like that, but in certain business terms, still people will invest in you and expect a return back in equity into the company. And so to me, there's a, I think about a lot of ways to play on that, where if folks are investing into you, maybe the return back is shares of whatever you got, or the return back can be something over a period of time. And I wouldn't suggest paying it straight back, but maybe it's like this much free every year over the next 10 years, and then they're still purchasing stuff for you, right? Instead of just straight, like, I'm gonna give you free stuff until we pay you back or something. Maybe it's like a certain percentage over the next 10 years or something. Or sometimes people don't even want that. They're just, they sometimes just want to invest because it makes it feel better than that. And then there's also a reparations map. I think there's a little bit more specifics now about participating in that. If you've kind of been through like either Soulfire Farms program or some of the Northeast farmers of color stuff, then you can be kind of a part of that. All right, we're almost to the action part, which will give us almost 30 minutes for questions, answers, and getting in it. So legal obligation around all of this. To be safe, track everything, you know, like I track stuff. These things are not just free money, they are income, right? So even though you're not selling your product for income, they're income, which means they're taxable, certain sizes and all of that stuff, you could probably get by. But if you're doing a lot of creative fundraising strategies, you're having people invest like naming rights or doing things like that, you gotta keep up with that and be able to claim that so that you can pay your taxes on it. And then the other thing that's just really good advice is it a gift or a loan, especially if it's coming from people you know or family members? Sometimes people will give you things as a gift. You can give up to about $16,000 without that person having to pay a gift tax. But sometimes it's a loan, and you can take loans out from people you know. I know people say be cautious of that. You just really want to have a promissory note, right? You really want to come up with something in writing if you're going to do that. And Farm Commons is a good resource for that, too. And then you also, I'm sharing all this, but the bottom line is check with your accountant, right? So check with your people, make sure that you're all good in the way you're thinking about setting your stuff up. All right, so how do I get out of this? All right, let's think through some of the stuff that you're trying to fundraise on, or ask me more questions, get into more details, and let's come up with a way to support something you're already up to, or what your specific questions are. I know we didn't get into like all the nitty gritties on specific grants. I can throw that up as a resource on our page. We do a grants calendar where we lay out like all the things that there is to apply for, when it's due, you know, and if we apply for that year, how much we ask for, all of those things. And we keep a spreadsheet of it and update it every year. So I can share one of those online. It also has some resources you can check. And then I also will name a few more. So does anybody want to talk through their thing? Yeah.
One thing I learned quite a while ago.
Oh, yeah, this is probably a mic time because you're going to say more than I can repeat.
One thing I learned quite a while ago that's freeing is people can't turn you down until you ask.
That's right.
So once you learn that and you're willing to hear no, you know, if two-thirds of the people turn you down, that means one-third of the people are probably saying yes. So be comfortable in being turned down.
Yeah, that's great. I feel like that's a great reminder, because if you don't ask, it's going to definitely be a no. And if you ask, it might be a yes, or it's going to be a no, and then it was still the same.
Okay, two things. One is SARE grants. If you're not familiar with SARE, you should definitely look into it. It's a great way to work on a specific project for their farmer rancher grants. Or if you're in cooperation with a number of farmers, you can think about doing a partnership grant. So I work for Central State University in Ohio, and we're doing a partnership grant with some flower growers to create a seasonal availability calendar they could use to promote their product to florists and wedding people who are like, oh yeah, I want my what is it? Some seasonal flowers that are only available in the spring and they want it in October. It's like, no, we have to do this education. So we can help provide this education and things like that as a partnership. And so that gets you paid for your time, gets you paid for some supplies. And if you're doing a big partnership grant with the university, oftentimes they'll take on a lot of the admin labor. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, anybody in here from Ohio?
Any Ohio folks?
I guess not. Well, we've got an incubator farm program. We're providing supplies and land. But, you know, if anybody is in Ohio or planning to move there soon, hit me up.
Yeah, that's great. And Sarah's downstairs in the exhibit hall. And then, we had some ups and downs at our incubator site. But they had equipment. They had resources. They had things. We had to bring in, like, compost and amendments, all that stuff. But they had a lot of things that gave us time, right, that, you know, things we could share until we got there.
Yeah. I work in Madison, Wisconsin, but I actually live about 50 miles west, and I'm not in Dane County. I'm in Iowa County, and I cannot get anyone from the local NRCS office to call me back. I've, like, tried emailing and calls, and so I don't know what the situation is there, but I don't know if anyone has any advice or suggestions about how to navigate that specific issue.
Yeah. Amy.
Hello, I'm Noemi Serrano with Michael Fields Ag Institute. One of our projects that we're working on is called Wisconsin Women in Conservation. We work across the state of Wisconsin in different regions. Iowa County isn't one of our counties specifically, but we have regional coordinators across the state that help women landowners and farmers connect with NRCS offices specifically, so we can be a resource in that way, and I will connect with you further.
I would say talk to somebody in an NRCS office around Iowa County, and they will know who they need to be. You know, they can use their internal network to inspire something.
Great. Who else? Anybody else? Other folks who are downstairs, he has one up here, but while you're bringing the mic, other folks who are downstairs is Compere. Compere has a small grant. I think it's like a few hundred dollars. I know one farmer who used it for their logo. Another farmer who's been able to buy a tool with it. People who have been able to pay for their conference registrations so they can come and then get more knowledge. But, you know, it's a quick, I think one farmer told me it took them 30 minutes to fill it out. It's a quick grant for, like, I think a few hundred bucks. So, and they're downstairs.
Okay. I'm in Milwaukee. And I really want to engage the intercity schools and bring them out. Where my land is technically in Mequon, which is a suburb. So I'm trying to think of ways to engage with those students that look like me that have never seen a farmer that looked like them.
Mm-hmm.
Which I was one of those children.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, great. So are you going to respond to this?
An add-on thing.
Okay, so, quick add-on, and then we're gonna tackle, what's your name?
Martise's
situation.
So since nobody here is from Ohio directly, this probably won't impact you, but in case people listen to this afterwards, so Central State has a grant out right now where if you've been farming for at least 3 years, and that's a pretty loose definition, and you belong to a historically underserved group, or are a veteran, we'll pay for you to go to conferences, we'll pay for you to go to attend programming throughout the state for travel, for hotels, so that you can go to programs that you might not be able to go to. So if anybody views this recording, look up Central State University Extension. We can get you in touch with folks.
Awesome, great. We're gonna get your question or comment. Is it connected to this one or is it a different thing? Okay, let's do that, and then I'm going to start this.
My advice would just be look in other places, too. I was really lucky. I got a $100,000 grant from Airbnb, and I'm building cabins at my farm, and that's going to help me and bring traffic and bring people out into the countryside, and who would have thought a company like Airbnb, but they want to support people getting outside. So just look in other places, too, not just the expected places.
Yes. I love that. So definitely looking into other places. The other thing I got there too was one of the things we always try to do is apply for something that we're going to be able to leverage into more, right? And so like You know, that one-time grant from Airbnb to build some small cabins, how many times is that going to turn over with people staying in the cabins, being able to have on-farm retreats or events or things like that? We got a capacity building grant early on, I think it was 2020, and one of the things we put in was coaching, to get coaching on what we should be doing moving forward. And so that was a piece of it. One thing we put in was logs for mushrooms, because we were like, okay, we're going to spend this money now, but we'll have mushrooms for several years, right? And then we could keep building off of that. But thinking about things that you're going to take a little funding that you might get now and how you can leverage that to even more, right? So even when you're asking for money. So the question we had up here, give me one second. The question we had up here was getting people out to your farm from the city. And what are you looking for there? You're thinking about, you need funding for that? You just need to make connections to be able to invite people out or have systems? Or what is it that you're looking for in that?
For me, it'd be multi-pronged. One, I want to get funding because I know that cost is going to be prohibitive. So I would really like to cover the entire cost so that neither the parents or the school district has a reason to say no based off of finances. And also, I know in MPS, they say no a lot, especially when it comes to kids that look like us.
Okay, I got it. So one thing I'm going to add before we get into it, and then I saw two hands, is what I found is that sometimes a lot of people will start with an assumption that people can't pay or that people don't have the budget. And so I'm gonna invite you to start with the assumption that the school can afford to bring those students out there. And then when you're hit with also, and you might prepare for the next situation, which is like, they're like, oh, we don't have the budget for it, this, that, and other thing. And so then when you're hit with that maybe they don't have the budget to bring people out there, you're gonna have this backup plan versus, feeling like it's like from the beginning you want it to be hefty enough to raise enough money to cover a bus to get out there and all of that. So I'll start with the assumption that they can afford for it or they have resources as a much bigger entity than you to figure out how to afford to get out there. And what I would offer is what are the answers to your questions as to why it's valuable for them to be there and like how is it a mutually beneficial thing that how much value you're offering to young people in the school is going to have them want to come out there and want to figure out where in their budget they're going to come out there. And then we'll talk about grants or we'll talk about other means for fundraising or campaigning, which is a good one for getting youth to the farm, like getting people out there. It's a great, like, contribute 20. Like, what's the cost of getting someone out there, right? Is that a set amount? Like, it'll take $75 to get a young person out to your farm if you do all the math, maybe, right? I'm just making that up. What's the bus? How far? Like a lunch for the day, whatever. Paying for your time, please also include paying for your time. And then if you want to do a campaign around that, it costs $75 to get a young person out there. Help us get 20, 10, 100 young people out to the farm this season or something, right? So I would think about that kind of stuff. And then there's probably definitely also funding to look into there. Did anybody have things they want to add as resources? Yeah.
We're at 10 minutes.
Thank you.
So I currently work at a nonprofit land trust in Illinois where we have a similar program where we take underserved youth out to its nature preserves like conservation areas and we do job readiness and basic science curriculum out there. And one funder in Illinois is the Grand Victoria Foundation, and they are switching their priority for what they want to fund from conservation and land-focused ecological uses, and they're more focusing on BIPOC and kinds of programs that you're talking about, getting BIPOC students out to farms and seeing you as an example is exactly the kind of thing that they want to fund. So,
great.
Grand Victoria Foundation.
Yeah. One of the things that I know the whole workshop could have been this, and I appreciate every resource that y'all have, please throw it out so that we can capture it. But one of the things we didn't do is give you the laundry list of where to look. But what I can put up, I'm going to share with you a website
that's just my website, and then it's going to have /MarbleC, which is where I'm going to drop all of these resources. So all the notes that we're capturing, we'll drop those up there, like a screen, like a thing of this. I'll share a sample grants calendar or places I go to look. If like grants is really your area you want to dig in, where do I go? How do I look? We'll drop all of that up there and resources, because I can go to one page and they'll list like a bunch of farming grants. Like, you know, and I think maybe sources like, does Michael Fields share with you some places to look to apply? Yeah. Yeah. So there's one like AUA, they have a page that's in Chicago, but it has grants that are fundable from all these regions, but they share with you a space to go, like different places that are offering grants. So there's a few sites that we'll throw up too that are sharing that. I saw your hand. Did you want to say something?
No.
Okay. Anybody else that want to share something or say something?
Hi, Frisch. I just wanted to share with everybody as an educational resource that can help you learn skills and then monetize various aspects of a farm business is the CSA Innovation Network. So we do a monthly to bi-monthly webinar series called the Ideas Lab, and it is centered on community-supported agriculture farms, but it is not by any means exclusive to only CSA practices. So, for example, next Tuesday, the 28th of February, we'll have a webinar that is on pursuing multi-farm or cooperative and aggregated farm product enterprises, so how you can build community relationships and consolidate products, just like you were talking about, where you buy them wholesale and then maybe retail them to your community through market avenues that you already have. And then something that, again, is not specific to CSA farms, but is coming up in our next April webinar would be agritourism opportunities. So I know that's come up a lot today, but a way to just use the land that you're already on and invite people to come to your farm in more unique ways than just buying the produce or animal products that you have out there. And we have also the recordings of all of the past webinars and another suite of resources on the Innovation Network's resource library on the website. You can also find me and my coworkers at the Fair Share CSA Coalition booth. We're the organization who founded that network in partnership with other organizations nationwide. So we would love to help you whether you are a CSA farm or not. But thank you for all the knowledge you are sharing today, Fresh.
Thank you. Thank you. I love all these things being added by the room. This is great. What else we got? And then you feel free to talk to me more. I'm reachable. I say this a lot, and I know people say this, and then people don't really follow up. But if you have questions, you can reach out to me. We'll provide my information. Hit me up. You want to schedule 15 minutes to kind of strategize or think through a session, like, I'm about it. I love, like, throwing out things or taking, if you share with me, like, who you are, what you're about, who your community is, I probably can, like, come up with some random ways. And they won't always work, but I don't want y'all to... One of the things I would love is that brainstorm without caring about if it's feasible. Like, don't start there. Throw out wild things that might not be feasible. You'd be like, I could never do that. Throw it out, and then that might open up something you didn't see around, like, oh, well, maybe I can't have 1,000 people at my farm, but maybe I could have 10 every, you know, month or something, you know, whatever it is. But
So I was wondering, if there are, I saw, I think it was on Michael Fields yesterday, that they have like a resource sharing, like sort of clearinghouse. Is anybody familiar of other ones or possibly setting one up so that like farmers in an area maybe can share cooler space or they can share tools? And how does that, and has anybody have any experience with that and how it worked?
I think we have an answer in the room right here.
Yeah. Well, just a thought. I know, so in Ohio, CSU is going to be trying to do something like that for larger equipment purchases. But I think that's also a great potential for a SARE partnership grant to set something like that up if one doesn't exist.
Oh, yeah, that's a great idea. That's a great idea. Yeah, I don't have any answers for that, but that's something we're always trying to figure out, too, is like who has capacity, who has the resources, and the staff person to dedicate to making that happen, you know?
I had a comment and a question. So I got a scholarship to come here from the Food Animal Concerns Trust, I think, FACT. And I know they have grants also, but it's specific to people that are working with animals. The other question I had is if anyone's aware of people that can help farmers sort of navigate legal things, like when you were talking about like fully utilizing your land and things like that. I've been trying to see about doing like, not so much an Airbnb, but like hip camp and do farm education. And I am running into so many like zoning and legal loopholes. And it's interesting because some of those zoning's meant to protect the agricultural land, but it's making it almost impossible for me to do anything.
Yeah.
And then issues with just like a long shared driveway that's from forever ago that's not meeting code and things like that.
Yeah. My first resource would be Farm Commons. And then I can't remember. I feel like someone shared something last year in that workshop that was all about hip camp and all of that, but I can't remember right now. I also saw a hand in the back. I don't know if that was responding to this. Does anyone else have any resources for folks who are trying to have farm stays and things on the land and battling legal? Okay. Cool. Say it again. He mentioned Farmers Union, and I want to say yours on the mic. You said Farm to Consumer Defense?
Yeah.
They have a booth. Yep. Cool. And Farmers Union. Well, they might, yeah, it might not hurt to ask. Go ahead.
So I'll just follow up on the previous two comments first about tool libraries or shared equipment and resources. We did just start the Midwest Vegetable Growers Network, MVEG, within the past year, and one of the subgroups working within that network is on technical skill attainment, and the focus area that they're currently investigating is equipment provisioning and researching different tools for farmers to turn to as like a crowdfunded or crowdsourced and peer-to-peer learning opportunities around those topics. So you can go to the MVEG network website, and we've got information on the technical equipment sharing, and you can reach out to the coordinator there to get a spreadsheet of tools and equipment available throughout the Midwest. It's MVEG, M-V-E-G network.org is the website. And then there's the contact information there, but it is still pretty new network, but that's an area that we're working towards. So I know there was a comment about potentially seeking a SARE partnership grant in that area. This network is already underway, at least in the Midwest region. And then the second comment about facing zoning regulations and legal regulations for trying to establish more events and things on your farm, we do anticipate covering that topic in the April Agritourism CSA Ideas Lab webinar. So
nice.
If you want to keep an eye out for that, at least either attend it live or watch the recording whenever it comes out, that'll be plugged through the network too.
Thank you for the reminder that I was going to wear my MVEG button. Because I think that that is going to be a really great resource for a lot of this work. And then did you ask? The webinar, is it going to be through the Fair Share or the CSA Innovations Network kind of? In April.
So I want to just let folks know this is only for Wisconsin, but the organization is the Wisconsin Agricultural Tourism Association. It's a nonprofit that's helping folks work out some of these zoning issues that you're having in Iowa County. And I'm actually in Iowa County, and I can't spend that Airbnb money right now because of the zoning issues. So we should definitely catch up. But that organization, Wisconsin Agricultural Tourism Association, are working at the state level drafting legislation with Tammy Baldwin so that you don't have to give up your agricultural status to be able to have agritourism events at your farm, which is what the zoning issue is for us. Thank you.
Thank you. There's so much good information. So I don't know how to start this back up, so we're just going to press down.
Thank you for all the information, all the input. I think like that end note reminded me of one of the things that got said earlier around policy and farm bill and all of those things. It's like, if you have a local food policy network or any group that you can be a part of that can help, you know, that can support you along those lines too, whether it's so that you can have agritourism happening on your farm or any of those things, that, you know, that may be a good connection to make. So it is time for lunch, and I'm just going to go through these last few things. Is hopefully you have some stuff that has been empowering to help you and your team and folks move forward. You can get this presentation. We're going to throw up all the resources. I'm going to share more stuff on freshertogether.com/marbleseed. Y'all are really dope and share so much great information. This is, the presentation will be up there. I'll throw up some sample grant calendar, which will be some samples of how to access resources or where to go look for them. All of these resource links that folks have been asking about, if there's anything else you want to see up there, then come let me know, because I don't want to hold y'all up for lunch. And here's my social media stuff, which I always forget to mention. At Fresher Together is for Fresher Together. I have a personal one, Chef Fresh 82. It gets updated like maybe once every couple months or so. And thank you. Here's that thing where me and somebody's sunflowers, even when they started to drift, like drip a little bit, but they're growing sunflowers anyway, and then adding a little photography, added income means. So thanks, y'all.